Hello, this is Wolfman611, and you're listening to Audio Netcast number 4. On today's show, I'll be talking about the latest news stories of interest that have happened over this past week. First up on the list is a story from Daily Tech, and it says, title of it is, Virgin CEO declares, quote, net neutrality is a load of bollocks, unquote. And apparently this guy seems to think that there should be two different types of internet access, those who pay and those who do not. Of course, those who pay get unrestricted access to high speeds across the internet, and those who don't pay basically get stuck on the old dirt road, single lane country dirt road. Just goes to show you why we have to have something like net neutrality, because if we don't have, guys like this are going to end up in power, and that's not a good thing. They're going to get their little ideas passed, and that'll become the norm, and then everybody will be screwed. You'll be paying premium dollars to have any of your content sent across the internet unrestricted instead of being in the slow lane. Well, it's a big thing. People got to get on board and start pushing for it, because if they don't, this shit's going to get passed, and if it does, everybody's going to get screwed. Well, except for the guys who, the ISPs, they'll make all kinds of money. Everybody else will have to fork with the money to play by their rules. Next up on the list, users fight to save Windows XP. This is another interesting battle. Apparently, the Windows XP users want to have their operating system available in stores for a while longer. They don't want to have Microsoft phase it out as fast as Microsoft wants to. I think Microsoft wants to get rid of it in June of this year. And a bunch of Windows users are basically getting a petition together and putting the petition online. But Microsoft doesn't want to see it. They don't want to have no look-see. Hear no evil, see no evil. That's the approach you're taking. But it just goes to show you how well Vista's liked if everybody else wants to keep XP going. Vista's popular. It's on, I think they say it's on over 100 million computers, but I think mainly the reason why that is because most of the computers, or the computer manufacturers that are selling new PCs, you know, pretty much are coming bundled with Vista. So if that's the only option you make available, if you get rid of Windows XP and you only sell Windows Vista, then guess what's going to become, you know, the mainstream? It's going to be Vista. But even still, people want to have their XP. I guess they figure that Vista doesn't warrant the upgrade or the extra cost of having it on a system. I mean, if your system's already running good now with XP, why would you want something like Vista, which requires a faster CPU, requires more RAM, requires a fairly decent hardware accelerator in terms of graphics cards in order just to sit there and look at the fancy Aero Glass desktop they have and all this stuff? For a lot of people, that's a waste of money. It's not worth it. They'd rather just sit back with their old XP system that's running everything, all current applications perfectly fine, and do business like that, not have to go out and get Vista. So again, though, it's an interesting article. It'll be interesting to see what Microsoft does here, because apparently the demand for XP is pretty high, and so is their need to get rid of it. Microsoft doesn't want it around. If they keep it around, you know, then their little Vista baby's going to suffer, so they got to get rid of XP and make it so that there is only one choice, which is going to be Vista. Still, though, interesting article. The next one up, Blog of Helios. This is an interesting article here. This talks about a guy, this is all about Ubuntu now, Linux. And basically, the guy turns around and goes to one of these conferences where all the Linux higher-ups are in terms of the actual corporations that deploy and every, you know, all these important people. And basically, when this guy gets up and does his little speech, he asks the question, why isn't Linux being advertised? Like, why is there no TV commercials for it or anything like that? And essentially, one of the CEOs there gets up, or one of the tech guys that's in charge of one of the companies that deploy it, turn around and say, well, that's not our problem, basically. If, you know, we support programmers, and like a lot of companies do, Novell turns around and hires a lot of some of the core Linux people to actually work on Linux while they're hired at Novell. Google does the same thing. They hire numerous people that work on open source and Linux and all that. Meanwhile, they're at Google. That's their day job, though, is to work on Linux. So a lot of these big companies do and are helping Linux by doing that. But who's going to advertise? I think this is one of the big problems. I did an article on this. You'll be able to find it back on my website there. I'll link to it in the show notes. And I asked the same question months ago. I said, well, you know, where's the Linux advertising? You turn your TV on, you see commercials for all kinds of, you know, Dell computers and Windows XP and Windows Vista and all this stuff. And yet there's no commercials whatsoever for Linux of any form. I've never heard nothing on radios. I've never heard nothing on TV or seen anything on TV. It just amazes me that there's no push to do that. The whole open source community is so good at getting a lot of projects started and then getting them going and picking up steam. But this seems to be one area where it's almost like the open source movement or the Linux movement, whatever you want to call them, don't really know what to do. or don't have the energy to do it. One of the two. There just seems like there's no drive to advertise it. A good example of this is Dell Computers. They turned around and they recently, I think within the last year, they've all of a sudden offered a set of desktops and laptop computers that have Ubuntu on them. But when you go onto their website, I'm on there now, and if you scroll down and look at their operating system, this is on the main Dell.com site. And when you scroll down and look at their operating systems offerings that they have here for all their other computers, it just says Windows Vista and Windows XP. There is no mention at all of Ubuntu, which is that's what they stock on their laptops or on some of their laptops and some of their desktop machines. Now, if you want to find Ubuntu, you have to scroll all the way down to the bottom of the webpage, and in very small print, you'll see a thing that says Open Source PCs. And if you click on that, you'll be brought to a page that'll show you the Ubuntu offerings in terms of what laptops and what desktop computers are offering it on. This to me is another, it's almost like a slap in the face. You know, it's cool that Dell's going to turn around and offer Ubuntu on the machines. That's good. I've been wishing for that for years, that a major manufacturer would actually finally step up and put Ubuntu on the machines and then start to push it. And that's the problem. They got Ubuntu on the computers, but they're not pushing it. It's almost like it's a secret. They don't want anybody really to know unless you're going to go on their site and start digging around. If you dig around, then you'll find it. If you don't dig around, you won't even know that they're doing it. And this, to me, is the problem. I don't even understand this. I mean, if you're going to... Dell turns around and advertise for Windows PCs all the time, and I mean, you don't even have to advertise for Windows PC. They already own 90% of the market. What do they need commercials for? And you'll see Dell computers up there being advertised, and Vista being advertised, and XP when it was out there, but yet here's Ubuntu, and there hasn't been a word said about it. And it really makes you wonder what they're doing there. You know, you would think that... I mean, it can only benefit them. If they turn around and they advertise that they have Linux computers with Ubuntu on them, that has to increase sales. Because what they're saying in this article here, again, I'll paste in the show notes, is that Ubuntu sales are going good. And matter of fact, the Ubuntu sales are going so good that they're increasing it. First, they made it available in the U.S., then I think they did somewhere over in Europe, and then actually they finally got to Canada and different places, and they're starting to roll it out all over the place. Now, if they're rolling this out all over the place, that means it's doing good. And if it's doing good, well, why don't you advertise for it? It can't be that they don't have the money. They're a huge company, and it would make the money to advertise. I don't get it. And that's what that blog of Helios was talking about. No one wants to take up the whole advertising side of actually trying to promote Linux or Ubuntu. There again, you got Mark Shuttleworth. He's poured all kinds of money into Ubuntu itself, but... Again, now here you're talking about a guy that's got multi-millions of dollars. I think he sold his VeriSign company for over $500 million. You know, you think that he could actually turn around and get a little bit of advertising going. I'm not talking about even for just for his own thing, just for Ubuntu. And apparently he's done that in South Africa, which is where he's from, but I haven't seen anything anywhere else. Like, my TV here, I get Canadian stations and U.S. stations as well, and I've never seen nothing, no ads at all for Ubuntu from Dell or the actual Ubuntu guy or anybody like that. There's just been nothing there. And I don't know, I find it puzzling. I don't understand what the barrier is and how can people don't want to advertise. It's almost like it's best just to keep it a secret. And I often wonder at times if Dell just keeps Ubuntu sort of in the closet just to turn around and use it to threaten Microsoft with. I mean, if they turn around and they say that, because they won't release any sales numbers, so you don't know exactly how well Ubuntu is doing, even though despite the fact they keep expanding the program to different countries and stuff, which makes you think that it's got to be doing fairly good. But because they don't release numbers and sales on the Ubuntu PCs they have, you don't really know. The thing with Dell that makes you wonder is if they turn around and actually using the whole Ubuntu thing just to keep Microsoft in order. Are they using it so that, say for example, they want to get a certain deal on XP or Vista or whatever, they can twist Microsoft's arm by saying, well, you know, if you don't do what we want, we'll just turn around and go full force with Ubuntu on our laptops. And as you can see, we're expanding it because this is the PR they're putting out. I got another article on that I'll link to in the show notes. And they could be using it basically to keep Microsoft in line, or at least to use it sort of as a threat. Other companies have done that. There's been, I think there was a big push one time in China that they were actually going to turn around and deploy their own Linux version, if you want to call it that. And that was a big ploy just to get Microsoft to come in there and actually reduce the prices of the systems that they wanted. Once they got the reduced price, all of a sudden China gave up on their version of Linux. I'm pretty sure it was China. It was one of those big countries over in Asia somewhere. So a lot of companies, or a lot of countries in this case, will use Linux or Ubuntu sort of as a stick to keep the other guy in line, you know. Drop your prices or we'll start going full force with the open source. There's a good term. And you'll suffer that. And if you look at what's going on, you look at the Triple E PC, that, when it originally came out, that had, I think it was Xandros or something like that on there. It wasn't Ubuntu, but it was some other Linux distribution. That thing sold like wildfire. As soon as they released it, it was just incredible. They sold, I think, several hundred thousand units within the first while that it was actually out on the market. And then Microsoft seen this, and right away they said, okay, wait a second, we can't have these Triple E PCs out there with no version of Windows on them. That's just, no, we can't have that. So now, apparently now, there's going to be Windows XP you can have on these things as well. Not only will you be able to get the Linux distribution on there, but also have XP as well on there. So Microsoft's clearly aware that there is a threat by the name of Linux. And if they don't watch what they're doing, you know, Linux is the type of thing that slowly, and I mean, it has done that over time. If you look at the last 10 years, it's gotten more popular and more popular, even without advertising. It's still going. And I think ultimately, even without the advertising, it'll keep going. But it'd be, I think the advertising end of things will just accelerate it. That's why you see companies like Microsoft and Dell, all these other companies out there advertising, you know, it gets their sales going faster. And I definitely think Linux or Ubuntu or some other Linux distribution does have to get out there, and we need to have some organized national ad campaign that covers TV, radio, you know, billboards, the whole nine yards. Actually, I think there have been a couple billboards for Ubuntu in Los Angeles, I think. I'm not sure. I think I heard something like that quite a while ago now. But anyway, that's the Ubuntu rant for the day. Well, there's one other thing. I had a buddy come over here probably about a month ago. And he had his computer, it had Windows XP on it, it was all loaded up with spyware and all this stuff. So I told him, I said, look, I said, if you want, I'll put Ubuntu on the machine. At this time, it was version 7.10. And we'll get rid of XP. So I sat him down in here one day, and I turned around, and I showed him, I put the live CD in first to make sure everything was going to work, a sound card, the network, all that stuff was going to work. And then I showed him, I said, here is Ubuntu. He's looking at the GNOME desktop. I showed him all the basic stuff, put a couple IM clients on there for Instant Messenger, for MSN and all that stuff. Got the thing all set up just the way he wanted it. Gave him his computer back. Now, I fully expected this guy. He's not a computer expert by any stretch of the imagination. Doesn't even really know what to do other than maybe turn the thing on. And for as long as I can remember, he's always been using Windows. So when I finally gave him this Ubuntu loaded machine, I figured it would last maybe about a week. And then he would get a hold of whoever put XP on his machine originally and get them to put XP back on there because this alien operating system wouldn't do what he wants. So anyway, a week goes by, 2 weeks go by, and now about a month goes by, and I figure one day he calls here, and I start talking on the phone and say, hey man, I said, what's going on with that operating system, Ubuntu? He said, oh, he said, it's working great. I just had one problem where we had to get email working. I think it was either email or his IM client. There was something not configured right somewhere, and apparently his 10-year-old daughter figured it out. So the moral of the story here is for all those haters out there that seem to think Linux is some command line driven, you know, that's the only way it operates is in the command line. You have to go out there and configure this and that. That it's pure crap. I mean, if you get the machine set up right out of the, like you would if you went out and bought a Windows machine, which keep in mind, that's the way most people get their Windows operating systems. They don't go out and buy them. That comes on their machine preloaded. If you give somebody a machine that has Ubuntu on there and it's set up to, you know, play DVDs, when you put a DVD in, it plays MP3 files and all that, you know, proprietary stuff that's naughty and you're not supposed to have. But anyway, if it does that, for the most part, I don't think they'll notice the difference. I mean, the GNOME desktop's a bit different than Windows XP. Your menu's at the top. But I mean, even that, you can switch to have it at the bottom and all that stuff. And it's just, he's happy now. You know, his biggest problem with XP was he had a teenage son that was going over to the porn sites and all that stuff, and anybody who knows anything about computers knows that's how all the computers get loaded up with spyware and viruses and all that. And now that he's got the Ubuntu machine over there, the teenage son doesn't even use the computer no more, I guess, because it's, I don't know why, he just doesn't get on there. I guess maybe he won't play the games he wants or whatever. There's something there that's keeping him off the machine. But anyway, if it's keeping him off the machine, also means the machine ain't getting infected, and the rest of the family can use it. And not have to put up with spyware and all that crap. And that's essentially what this guy wanted when he brought the machine here anyway. He wanted the thing to work for him and his family. And if the one son couldn't use it, well then too bad, you know. He was the one infecting Windows to high heavens to start with. But it just goes to show you, if it's set up, you know, anybody can use it. And it's not a great big scary thing like a lot of people make it out to be. Fairly simple to use. Here's another news story from Daily Tech. Apparently it's Europe says pirates can stay on the net. This is an interesting story, too. Over in Europe, I guess they want to actually take the ISPs and make them start filtering people's traffic so that any kind of copyrighted goods like movies and music and all that stuff, or porn movies, whatever you want to put on there, gets filtered by the actual ISPs, and they don't allow their customers to get this stuff. Matter of fact, what they would do is that if they caught you doing it once, they would try and give you a warning. I think it's three shots and you're out, basically. Three warnings and you're out. Second time, another warning. Third time, they try to, or actually not try, they were trying to actually have it so that you'd be disconnected from the internet. And any ISP, by the way, not just that ISP, but they were going to make it so that once you were blacklisted, you were blacklisted, blacklisted right across the board. And to put it in short, they got shot down. I guess people figured there'd be too many privacy concerns, because, I mean, obviously they're going to have to basically inspect everybody's internet traffic going back and forth for every user they have, and there's just too much privacy concerns there for them to actually go ahead with this type of system. So for the time being, at least, not that I'm a big fan of the pirates, but right now they can still get the yarr, John. You know, yarr! And there's no problem so far. But I suspect this will change, because a lot of these, you take the RIAA or the MPAA, them type of guys that look after the movie rights and the audio and all that stuff, they're gonna keep pushing the stuff any which way they can. And, you know, until they run out of money or until they're dead, one of the two, they're just going to keep going on with this stuff. They're always going to want to have ISPs get in there and, you know, start getting rid of their users, or the ones at least that are downloading that type of content, can them guys get rid of their access and stuff. So, I don't know, I guess this is a bit of a win. People still can have internet traffic that's not filtered. Now, the next story is Gran Turismo racing to PC. This is from IGN.com. And this is an interesting story. Apparently, the creator of Gran Turismo wants to have a PC version of the game. Normally, this game's only been released for the PlayStation platform, or console, and has never made it, as far as I know, to any other console, or even the PC. Now, the creator of it wants it to go to the PC, because he wants to break into the Chinese gaming market, and I guess there's more PCs there than anything else. This is interesting. Gran Turismo is a good game to start with. Actually, it's probably one of the best car simulators that I've seen, period. And if they do this, and if they do it properly, it could be a very good game for the PC. There's not really all that many good games for the PC. I think there's GTR 2, which actually is a very good racing game, but it doesn't have 300 or 400 cars. There's a very limited selection of cars there. But it's still done really well. You get the cockpits, and it's got the headlights all look real and stuff when you're going down the track at nighttime. It's got real daytime to nighttime transitions. You can set the different times when you want to go on the track, so if you want it to look like dusk or morning or whatever, you can actually do that. And it looks really, really cool. They did an excellent job on that game, GTR 2. But back to Gran Turismo. Basically, they want to have this thing ported to the PC so that they can break into the Chinese market in terms of gaming. My only problem with this is that every PC port that I've seen where they've taken a game from a console and put it on the PC, and I haven't seen many of them. I've only seen maybe 4 or 5. But the ones I have seen have all sucked. And this started with Halo, the original Xbox game. I got that here, and I turned around and I put it on the machine. And the machine I had at the time was way more powerful than a standard Xbox by a long shot, in terms of graphics and in terms of CPU power. And that game was just massively slow. It was almost like it was unoptimized for a PC, if you want to call it that. It was just crap. I played, I don't know, maybe I got halfway through putting up with the actual slowdowns and all that, and I just ended up taking it off the machine. It wasn't worth my time. The second game I had that was from console was one of the Grand Theft Auto games. I'm not sure if it was Grand Theft Auto 3 or it was one where you're actually going around in third person. Same thing there. That thing just ran dog slow. Like, it was, I couldn't even believe it. And again, the machine that it was running on was way higher than what a PlayStation was at the time in terms of processing power and graphics power. So the whole port thing just soured me right off the bat, because I haven't seen a game ported yet that's any good. The other game that was bad was Grand Theft Auto 3. Not Grand Theft Auto 3. I just actually got it a couple weeks ago there. I bought it in anticipation of the Grand Theft Auto 4 game that's going to be coming out on April 29th. I went out and bought off the Steam-powered site, Valve's Steam distribution network. I went out and I picked up Grand Theft Auto 3 San Andreas, thinking that that was going to be good too, right? Surprise, surprise. I turned around and I get it on the machine, and this time, this was different. This time, well, it might be actually due to do with the actual horsepower of this machine here, but when I got it on the machine this time, it ran perfectly fine. Smooth as can be, but I mean, keep in mind, the actual graphics in the game are quite dated compared to anything you'd see on the PC today, like in terms of games like Battlefield or anything like that. Battlefield 2, 2142, and all that stuff. They have way better graphics than the Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. But having said that, I just wanted it to, you know, I wanted to get in there and screw around with it just long enough so that keep me busy until the actual Grand Theft Auto 4 was released. But, surprise, surprise, once I bought the thing off steampowered.com, for about $20 I got the thing, and every time I put the game on, I'd get maybe about half an hour into the game, and the thing would just crash my computer. caused the lockup. Sometimes the lockups weren't bad enough that I could actually tab out and get to the desktop. Other times it was the only thing you could do was reset the machine. Everything was locked up. And I tried to be fair with it. I went in and I changed the sound acceleration. I went through looking through forums to see if I could find any kind of tweaks or things to turn off or whatever just to make it run without the crashing, and no luck. Everything I tried didn't matter. It still kept crashing. Now, this machine that I'm running it on, it might be the fact that it's dual core. I don't know if that's a factor or not. But either way, I couldn't get the thing to go properly. Or actually, correction, I could get it to go properly. It didn't want to run for any length of time without crashing. So I pulled that off the machine. I just had enough. I'm not going to sit there and play a game where every half an hour it locks my machine up. It's not worth it. But I kind of figured that going in. Like I said before, all the previous ports that I've played for games that were ported to the PC all sucked, and I really didn't expect this one to be any different. And sure enough, it wasn't. It was garbage. Now, that also brings up another story. Ars Technica. They got an article here. Again, this will be in the show notes. And it's called Assassin's Creed on PC. Bad UI, bad DRM, bad port. And this one here, you can actually see the pictures in it. Just the graphics are all scrambled in it. This is for the game Assassin's Creed. I guess they ported that over, probably from the Xbox, I would assume, over to the PC. And these guys just simply weren't happy with this at all. At least on the machine they played it on, was a really bad port. And that sums up my whole thing there. I mean, all the ports that I played are just crap. Not worth the time of day. So, needless to say, I won't be bothering with any more ports. At least when it comes to going from a console to the computer. Hopefully with Gran Turismo, when they actually, if they do take the actual racing game Gran Turismo over to the PC, I hope they actually do it from the ground up on the PC and make it a proper PC game, not a port. Actually make it for the PC. Utilize the hardware that's there, the whole nine yards, make the textures properly and everything else. If they do that, then it probably will be a good game, but if it's just a port, I wouldn't waste my money on it. The other thing I should mention is Grand Theft Auto 4 is slowly getting closer. As I make this recording, it's the 21st of April, 2008, and the game's going to be released on the 29th of April. And I gotta say, there's more and more screenshots coming out, and get more anxious as time goes on here. I want to actually get my hands on this game and play it. I have seen a couple reviews for the game, I think three overall so far, and two of those reviews gave the game a 10 out of 10, which is incredible because I don't think I've ever seen a review, well, at least on the, I only go to two sites, I only go to GameSpot and IGN. Those are the two basically I deal with. And I've never seen them guys at least give a game a 10, but apparently these other magazines that reviewed the early versions of Grand Theft Auto decided that the game was good enough to give it a 10 out of 10. The other review, the third one, they wanted to give it an 11 out of 10, I believe. And the funny thing, I don't even actually get what they were talking about there, because a couple things they did critique. I think that one of them was graphics and something else. So when you're reading it, it clearly wasn't perfect, but at the end of the day, their conclusion, I guess you want to call it that, was to give it 11 out of 10. So overall, the game's shaping up quite well, although I'm not convinced yet. I mean, these articles that I've seen so far, they could just be, you know, magazines that just want to hype the game up and get you to go out there and buy it, despite the fact that the game has serious issues. So I won't really know what it has, if it's good or serious issues or whatever, until I actually get my paws on the thing. Which, hopefully, will be soon enough. I'm waiting to see if they're going to have a midnight release here in the city I live in. Apparently there was 150 pre-orders or something like that when I called them up last to check. So it'll be interesting if they have the actual midnight launch. I might go down there and check that out. Or I might actually not even bother and go the next day because I hate standing in line. So the last thing I want to do is stand out in the street, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning waiting for a game. But anyway, that's Grand Theft Auto. I'll keep everybody posted of my views of that game when I finally do get it. Or as the time counts down to actually getting it. Either way, I would like to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to this Netcast, and I hope to have another one ready to go soon. All the articles in the Netcast will have links in the show notes on my website at www.wolfmansbytes.com. That's www.wolfmansbytes.com. Feel free to share this Netcast with friends or even upload it to P2P sites. This audio Netcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 2.5 license for Canada. More information on the license can be found at the bottom of any page on my website. And once again, thank you for listening, and I will talk to you again next week. Take care.